you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to The Phantom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Sackard, the features editor at Sci-Fi Wire. Now I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette, who just dropped up with a pomegranate
seed. It was a blueberry. Down my shirt.
All right. Emily is a clumsy editor at Contently. Emily, yep. Was a...
nothing. I'll probably find that blueberry later, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you wrote that if... I wrote, like, what up in our script was really long, and you said if I didn't say, like, Budweiser, I'm a cop. So I just want to make sure.
Yeah. In a Google comment.
Yeah, so I am not a cop. So.
You're not. It's true. Confirmed.
I definitely did not do that. Anyways, what's up?
What's up is... so much stuff happened today.
Yes, this was...
On the internet.
A really busy day.
The one that my... you know, has weighed heaviest on my mind was someone filmed a short video of a rat in the subway today who was trapped behind a pillar because there was so much water flowing by him and he looked so scared.
He did. I like don't as often see the anthropomorphic features of a rat as you do.
You could see the fear.
Yeah, in its face. And I mean, to me, that rat is definitely gone.
Mm-mm.
That rat, I mean, there was so much water pouring all around. It's like being on a tiny island in the middle of a river.
I can't have a thought like that and then continue with my day
because
I love rats. And also, you told me that you were like, that rat's dead. And I was like, no, it's not. And then minutes later, my boyfriend texted me, I'm still thinking about Subway Rat. I'm trying to find it. And I was like, yeah, I'm really worried about him. And he said, I wish I'd been there. I would have helped him.
You guys are perfect for each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing about it is what if it's the same thing as Pizza Rat and just the sad ending for his life?
Then he had a performer's life because Pizza Rat is a little performance artist.
True. But I'm just saying like a sad ending for Pizza Rat.
I mean, we all have sad endings.
That's true. That is very true.
The rat's going to die. I just don't want his last moments to be fear.
Maybe he just said, you know what? I'm just going to ride this wave out. And he rode amazingly down the wave.
He became Surfer Rat.
Yeah, he became Surfer Rat all along down the subway.
That's fine.
Tunnel.
That's if he died
destiny.
In a moment of glory.
Yeah,
sure, that's better.
All the other rats were like, "Oh my god,
The legend of Surfer Rat."
He went from Pizza Rat to Subway Rat.
There actually are surfing rats, by the way. There's videos. Yeah, people take their rats surfing because rats really love swimming.
All right.
We put our rats in the bathtub.
All right. Well, why don't we just talk about something else, though?
Yeah, sure.
What is the geekiest thing you did this week?
Geekiest thing I did this week, I watched all of that children's series, The Dragon Prince, on Netflix, from one of the writers of Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra. It was just okay.
Why did you watch the whole thing?
Because the story was... they were very good at ending each 25-minute episode at, like, a moment that made you feel like, oh, well, now we got to see what happens.
It's that Netflix data science.
Yeah, it was definitely, like, optimized, but there were only 9 episodes, so
okay.
It didn't feel, like, insane to commit to it. And also, they're very, like, they sprinkle in enough chuckle moments that you feel
chuckles
satiated. Yeah.
Yeah, good chuckle per minute was decent.
Yeah, chuckle per minute... satisfying. What did you do that was geeky?
Well, we watched American Vandal, the whole series, series 2.
That's not geeky.
No, I'm just saying, you watched the whole Netflix series, I watched the whole Netflix series.
Oh, I also watched American Vandal season 2.
All right. Mm-hmm. What did you think of it?
I mean, it wasn't going to be as good as the first one. I also felt really disturbed for, like, today's teenagers.
Yeah, the amount that goes on. And yeah, like you mentioned, like, imagine having Facebook in, like, 5th grade.
Horrible.
Everything about you is embarrassing.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that so little of my high school experience is on Facebook.
Yeah, I think I was in 8th grade when Facebook became a thing.
But did you get it in 8th grade?
No, but I used AIM constantly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. I did too. But
you weren't like editing a version of yourself yet. That
came
later.
I'm just glad the photos of me from like 6th grade are not up.
I know. I've deleted my Facebook every few years, so my Facebook photos don't... Well, actually, I'm off Facebook now, but my Facebook photos never went past a few years because I was like, I don't want people clicking around.
Yeah, it's forever following you. And like, the thing about season two was that season one felt so smart and it was about the school, but really everything was like subtext. You know, you talk, look at, see like people who are doomed from the start, the way society treats them, you know, the way people interact. This one, everything was text. You know, there was no, did not feel like there was any allegory here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it was, I mean, I think I would have enjoyed season two more if I hadn't seen season one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so the geeky thing I did was I'm doing this. So last night was the first time I haven't had to like do work in a while because I had to give myself extra work.
And you just live tweeted the Emmys.
Yes, I live tweeted the Emmys. Got some sweet retweets off the Teddy Perkins thing. you know, the Keith Stanfield was there dressed as the Teddy Perkins. Anyways, but I didn't have any work to do and I was like freaking out because I'm not good at not doing work. Mm-hmm. I was like antsy. So I started looking on. I don't have any money right now because I'm going on moving. I have to go on a trip to Ireland, which I'm excited about, but it costs money. So I don't have any money to like spend on silly things, let alone completely useless things that I don't have room for. But I went, anyways, this is kind of therapeutic for me. I go on eBay and look at weird stuff, like look at Godzilla stuff sometimes or different, you know, video game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday I went through Godzilla stuff and I was texting you guys, you and Eric, some of the stuff, but some of the weirdest stuff, like Godzilla and Minya on a tricycle from the 70s.
I like that. Toy.
Yeah. And so I'm going to now do this whole series on Sci-Fi Wire of the coolest weird stuff I found on eBay about this or that character.
Are you going to order it?
No.
The
Minya thing was like $250.
Oh, geez. I didn't even see that.
There was like a 6-foot tall blow up Godzilla from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That was like $300.
I'm impressed that it was preserved.
I mean, like, it was in the box, too.
Whoa.
Someone found it in their garage, I assume, and was like, let me get really ambitious on selling this thing.
That's mint condition.
Yeah. So, I mean, I am moving to a new apartment, and you could use a few more decorations. So,
mm-hmm. Inflatable.
Yeah. I'll have to pay the rent by myself, because Julie will definitely leave.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. So, I was down a real rabbit hole last night. So, that was the geeky thing I guess I've done. It's only been a few days. So.
Not too bad.
Of the week, you know. I'm sure it'll get worse. I'm going to go down a much darker rabbit hole by tomorrow, I'm sure. Anyways,
speaking of dark rabbit holes.
Today we have a lot of hard news, as we alluded to.
Yes.
Literally hard.
Where should we start?
Why don't we start with Stormy Daniels' new book, Trump's Penis.
That is the title.
Yes. The title. President Donald Trump, his penis is in the news again.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, even beyond Bill Clinton, the most frequently reported on penis in American politics.
I cannot believe if someone had told our parents that during the Clinton administration, just buckle up because it's going to be more penis talk.
Buckle up for penis talk.
I learned what oral sex was because of Clinton.
That didn't sound good. Did he teach you personally?
No, God.
That's gross.
Ew.
I shouldn't say that.
I was a fetus.
Oh, yeah, you're young. You're not a fetus.
I'm young.
Come on.
Was I? When was he in office?
He was office elected in 92, so he started in 93.
Yeah, right. I was an infant. But, yeah, I definitely remember seeing it on the news and being like, well, why would he put a cigar in her? Like, what? And then...
She was lighting it.
I had, like, the...
Did your dad tell you that? I can imagine your dad saying that.
No, my dad was not involved in the conversation. No, I think my mom was... Just like, she was like, well, all right, I guess this is the moment. I have to tell you everything.
Tell my 7-year-old daughter about cigars.
Yeah. And then years later, I learned the thing about the dress and I was like, what? Anyway, God help kids who are learning about sex during the Trump administration.
Yeah. I mean, if you told their parents that Trump would be president back then, they'd be like,
Yeah, I don't know.
So Stormy Daniels' book says, she said that, you know, she famously had one night of very low simmering passion. I think it was just one night.
Oh, wow.
And she said, and I'll paraphrase her, that Trump's penis looked like, so he had a gigantic head to his penis.
Yeah.
And it looks like Toad from Mario Kart. He also had the pubes of a Yeti, she said, but that's neither here nor there. The Toad part really, I think, is what took the headlines. So, what are your thoughts on Trump's Toad penis?
My first thought is like, well, okay, at least it wasn't a size joke, because that sucks.
True.
Second thought was like, I've said this to you today, but feel bad for all the men in the country that were like, how big is the head of my penis? Like, is that too big? Like,
Sure.
How big are we talking, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone's laughing at this, like, super specific thing that no one needed to feel self-conscious about until today. And now they're like, well, wait a minute. Like, this is another measurement that I have to think about?
It's yeah, crazy. Generally it's length, but now we're talking about head width.
That's crazy.
And head width compared to shaft.
Yeah. Width too. It's like when, you know, the Kardashians come up with a new hashtag about women's bodies, and it's like, well, now I have to wonder if I have this? That's yeah. crazy. Yeah, so I feel bad for men.
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking of? You know those, like, in playgrounds where they look at a giant toadstool and the water comes out?
Yeah, when he... Never mind.
Yeah. Yes, exactly that. This is actually the perfect segue for this week's show, because we were talking about political fandom. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, we were talking about Beto O'Rourke. I can't pronounce it because I'm from Jersey. Beto O'Rourke. He is the Democratic representative from Texas who is now running for Senate against Ted Cruz. And there is such a clear contrast between those two. Not even to, like, this is not even political to say. Like, Cruz is a bit of a cruel fink, and Beto is, like, literally a punk rocker.
He's so cool.
He's, like, he's young. He might actually, he could win in Texas. He didn't have a great poll.
Really?
Yeah, it didn't come out. There was a poll today. He was down like 7, but who knows? Because he's been within like the margin of error in all the other polls, so maybe this is an outlier. Mm. Anyways, a few weeks ago we were talking about him, and I realized. So this is the conversation. I think we should reenact it. Let's do this right
now.
Oh, here.
Sure.
Yeah,
I have it. Right, so this is our real G chat.
Yeah.
I said, I think Beto's my favorite archetype, recovered punk party boy turned do-gooder family man.
I said, who is still edgy in secret. Like, he'd know exactly what punk was playing and could spend all night smoking cigs with you, but he'd be getting, like, a few texts from his wife, who knows he's out and respects it and is kind of into it, but he still has to update him about the baby. And then I said, I guess I just technically wrote Beto fan fiction.
Yeah, that was your first fan fiction, I think.
My first fan fiction after all this time on Phantom Files. And so it got me thinking about political fandom, and that's not much different from the kind of fandom we usually talk about here. Mm-hmm. People get really passionate about it. You know, so it's not just about policy and ideals. They really get into the candidates and the politicians themselves. Because if they were only caring about political issues, there would be no Republicans. But, I mean, look what happened with Obama in 08, or even John McCain in death. Mm-hmm. His funeral was like 5 days long.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people collect political paraphernalia. So often it's like, if you go to a political convention, it's like being at a Comic-Con for, you know, political people, for fans of the process and governors.
Yeah, and they make memes and fan art.
Yeah. So, you know, they're voting for the person over the policy. So now that we're in the heat of election season, we wanted to talk about political fandom. And speaking of fan art, we have Patrick Gabaldon here on the show. He does work fan art of Beto O'Rourke, and it's become really big on Instagram, and I found him while looking at Beto O'Rourke on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And so, really excited to talk to him. Patrick, what's up?
What's up? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Thank you for being here.
Be on with you.
So, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and how you ended up, I mean, I know you're an artist. Went to your site, you do really awesome work that's not Beto based, but
yeah.
Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so paint, do some graphic drawing and stuff here in El Paso, Texas, where Beto's from. He's our local rep. He lives just a couple blocks over from where I live. So he's pretty well known. I just started doodling and drew a doodle of Beto, and then everything's kind of just blown up since.
That's so cool. If he lives near you, have you met him? Like,
yeah,
before
I've met
he ran?
Him several times. Yeah, yeah, he's always out and about. He's running or at the grocery store with his kids or whatever. He's a super, super nice guy, really approachable. I think the first time I ever met him was at a party, actually. I know you're talking about kind of somebody that gets a text from his wife after talking punk rock with you. Mm-hmm. I met him at a 90s party, and if I remember correctly, him and his wife showed up as John Travolta and Uma Thurman from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, my God. Oh,
that's awesome.
And he's pretty tall, so when he walked into the room with, you know, the slick back hair, I was like, is that the congressman? And then I turned and was like, is that his wife? That's a pretty rad costume.
Damn.
For a 90s party.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I hope that was like yesterday.
Yeah, it was so cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So you've gotten to know him a little bit. Tell me, you know, we're in New York City, and we hear all about him. And it's like, crazily enough, I'll get emails being like, there's phone banking for Beto in like on 79th Street in someone's apartment. I'm like, what? They don't even have that for like New York candidates. So what is it like down there with him running?
Down here, it's pretty crazy. He's pretty well-liked. I mean, he's been around for a while. He was on city council, then, of course, he ran against the congressman from here that was, I mean, man, people thought he was never going to leave Washington, Sylvester Reyes, and Beto O'Rourke was just kind of outworked him and made it happen. But he's super popular, so there's phone baking parties, block walking parties all the time. There's stickers everywhere, which is awesome to see. And I was just out in Washington, D.C., and whenever I wore my Bethel shirt, tons of people would approach us, talk to us, we'd give them free stuff. So it is kind of crazy that everywhere we go, travel, people know who he is.
You know, obviously, people get behind politicians for different reasons, and some people love politicians more. Well, some politicians are more loved than others. But what is it about Beto that really connects with people and with you?
Yeah, I think it's because he's genuine. You might have a conversation with him, and maybe he disagrees with you, or you disagree with him. But he's very authentic to himself. He's never once tried to convince someone by kind of berating them or beating them down, which is something that I think a lot of people have grown to really appreciate about him, is that you can disagree with him and still share some barbecue or have a nice time with him or talk to him, even if you guys totally disagree or you're total on opposite poles. So it's kind of a breath of fresh air to have a politician representing us here from El Paso that's that way. And now, thankfully, the rest of Texas and hopefully the country gets to experience it too. We're pretty lucky.
You know, I know Texas is, obviously it's a red state, but El Paso area is pretty blue. So, you know, what is it? He connects a lot of Republicans, right? He's doing pretty well in the polls. Like, what do you think it is that attracts them to him versus the Democratic Party?
I think because he has really gone everywhere. He's visited every single county. He's gone to some really tiny towns. And then he puts himself up there. And when he goes into these small towns and smaller rural communities that might feel different on certain issues, he just tells them straight up his position. I've seen it because I would follow all his Facebook Live events, which were basically every time of the day, all day. And he would just never shy away from letting people know his opinion. And I think people have grown to respect that and really be happy that they can talk to somebody that disagrees with them, but that isn't trying to convince them one way or the other or hiding their position. You know, he's up front. He tells you exactly what he feels on an issue, and then it's up to you to decide, you know, whether you agree or disagree, but he's not kind of running away from tough questions.
You know, when you, when you have spoken with him and been at events, like, people wear their shirts, they don't just go see this guy speak. So it's weird. It's not weird, but it's different to have a guy's face on like your body and your stickers on your t-shirt.
Right. It is pretty weird. I wonder how he must feel about it. My guess is maybe that's why his imagery and design for the campaign is pretty, pretty bold and straightforward. And it kind of doesn't have a link to like his face or, you know, him smiling, you know, vote for me, here's my mug on a sticker. And that's kind of why I designed the little imagery that I wanted to do, because I knew his campaign imagery was kind of getting away from necessarily the personality and pushing people to focus and look at him as a person. The stuff I created was trying to hopefully put a face to what people see and what they connect with him. I feel weird sometimes wearing my Bethel shirt or other stuff that I've designed. I feel it's a little self-serving, but it is pretty cool to see so many people accept and like the little doodles that I've been able to do.
Yeah, when did you start creating those?
It was in, I think, last November, about a year ago. We were, my wife and I were talking about, once he announced, we were talking about like, oh, well, how much do we donate? How much can we afford to donate? And she had the idea of maybe drawing something, designing something, and then making reproductions and then donating personally that way. So I just did a quick little design. I was like, well, what I like about Bethel. And when I've met him and hung out with him, he's always super kind and fun and real personable. So I wanted something that reflected his personality, and did a little doodle and just kind of put it out there. And the reception was way more than I thought, even locally, in our small community. And then now it's kind of grown beyond Texas. So it's pretty cool.
I assume he's seen them all.
Yeah, he was actually telling me, last time he came through El Paso, they asked me to introduce him at one of these town hall things. It was pretty cool. And he was telling me that every time he sees one of those shirts, he smiles, he likes it, because he knows that came from his hometown. Aww. And came from El Paso. So he was saying, he's like, yeah, every time I see one in the crowd, I smile because I know that, you know, it came from home. And a friend of mine sent me a picture with her and him, and she was wearing it, and he's like pointing at her shirt. She's pointing back up at him, and she said, yeah, he told me, oh, look, that's a Gobble Dome. Pretty rad.
You know, were you, I don't know, like, how much political involvement you've had before, but I remember, obviously, Obama in 08. He had this mm-hmm. huge following that was beyond just, hey, we don't like George W. Bush, let's get a Democrat in there. I mean, he,
right.
you know, overcame Hillary Clinton running, who seemed like the obvious winner, the person who's going to win the primary. Did you have the same sort of thing for Obama? Were you into previous political candidates in any way that was like this?
Nowhere near like this. I voted and I paid close attention, and I've always been kind of into politics. It was one of the kind of things I nerd out about a little bit. And I voted, and I think the first time Barack Obama ran, we caucused for Hillary, but we had never done anything like that at all. I had just graduated from college. We still vote and pay close attention. But once Bethel decided to run, we thought, you know, we got to do more than just vote. So we said, well, we should donate. And then after we donated, we was like, well, we should do more than just donate. So now we're trying to help as much as we can with art and doodles and making stickers and just kind of posting a lot, just to try and help in any little way we can.
So, I mean, I think about Bernie Sanders, like people were really into him in 2016. But what's interesting about Beto is that the guy he's running against is so hated, you know, amongst mm-hmm. Democrats. Yeah. Do you think that adds to it?
Oh, definitely. I think so. I think so here. I mean, like, I was just talking to my wife right now, and she's like, oh, can you believe that Ted Cruz did this or did that? And I don't know if it's the same for the rest of the state, but I know I never really liked Ted Cruz that much. In general, I wasn't about his brand as a guy. Mm-hmm. And then when Trump attacked him about his wife and his dad killing JFK and all this ridiculous stuff, and he stood there at the convention and was like, look, vote your conscience. This guy kind of disparaged my family and my wife, and screw him. I kind of had a little bit of respect. I was like, look, he's crazy. I don't agree with him on most of the positions he has policy-wise, but, you know, at least he had some stones there at that moment, some integrity to stand up. And then what was it, like a week later, he was phone banking for the guy.
Yeah.
So every time I see Ted Cruz, I can't imagine what his family would think. And then it's like, well, do they know he's just doing it because he doesn't really care? He just wants to win or be successful at any cost. Mm-hmm. And I feel like at least in El Paso, and every time he does something, it's just like, really, guy? Like, especially, and now these fake summons mailers that look really, really scary if you're a person that, you know, isn't knowledgeable, or maybe English is your second language, or you're elderly and you see a summons in the mail. Like, mm-hmm. he's just super shady, too. So it's one of those things, like, if a Democrat's going to beat a Republican, they've got to be honest, at least my perspective, not that I'm an expert, but they got to be honest. And then they also have a really, really, really terrible candidate. Kind of mirrors the Alabama race a little bit.
Yes.
When Doug Jones won, yeah.
I mean, but Beto wants to ban barbecue, right?
Oh, yeah, that was the new thing, right?
So,
Jesus Christ.
So stupid.
They have
so
nothing.
That was kind of amazing.
So dumb.
Yeah.
So do you think that, you know, let's say Beto doesn't win, do you think that fandom will remain there for him even in a loss?
I think so. It's hard to say because El Paso, we're kind of insulated. We're, you know, way out in the border with Mexico and New Mexico. We're just as close to LA as we are to Houston. So it's kind of a weird place, not quite USA, not quite Mexico. And Bethel here, he's had a lot of respect and admiration for a while because he works for the constituency. So that's, I know as far as El Paso, whether he wins, I mean, especially if he wins, I mean, it'll be an insane party. But I don't think he's going to lose any respect or admiration. And especially, I think, in the other cities in Texas and the rural areas, because it was crazy to read some of those stories that no state elected official or person running for elected office had ever visited like hundreds of counties in the state because they're so far or super rural. And it just blows my mind that, man, he put so many miles on that truck driving to these tiny, tiny, tiny towns and making it happen. I mean, that's how he won city council the first time. No one thought he would do it. And he knocked on every single door in his district. And then when he ran for state Congress, he pretty much knocked on every single door in the city, and that's how he won. So,
wow.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, he got FaceTime with everyone, and that's obviously impossible to do as hard as he tries in Texas. But you mentioned his social media, his Facebook broadcasts, and that kind of mirrors the way, like, some of the celebrities that we cover who have great social media presences that, you know, we watch them on Instagram Live, and that's why our Facebook Live, and that's why people get really into them. How much do you think that has impacted people?
I think that's been huge because you get to see somebody in their everyday life interactions. And it's, I mean, we've grown up with that, at least I think younger generation. I don't know if I'm not that young, but generation growing up with social media, you're kind of used to that. And then you know that, man, if he's on Facebook Live pretty much all the time, I remember one day, I think he was only not live for like 10 minutes or something. And then when he did the road trip, and you just get to see interactions he has with normal people, waiters and people at a restaurant and people at a shop that he goes into. And I think that access has made it really, really incredible. And that's what's grown a lot of the admiration. Because, yeah, you're right. We sometimes at night, my wife will be like, all right, it's time for my favorite TV show. And she like pulls up all her Instagram stories of all the different people and accounts that we both like. And she just sits there and we go through them. And the same was for Beth, though. I could know that I could check up Facebook and see that he was live somewhere, you know, in the Rio Grande Valley or in Austin at any time of the day. Even if I was just sitting at my desk at work, I knew that I could check in and see what the campaign was up to and what Bethel was up to.
Yeah, I mean, it's so rare to see politicians speak about something without the sensation that someone wrote their talking points for them. Like, it's just him with a dashboard camera. That's such an unfamiliar sight.
Right. Especially because when Bethel did his, like that one Facebook streaming with the Republican Congressman Will Hurd from kind of this general region, they were live all the time and Bethel's having conversation and then you see him do a speech or like, a, you know, a stump speech at a place and then do a town hall and he speaks the same. He's not doing this Ted Cruz cadence or this kind of normal politician cadence of, let me tell you, and this kind of the whole dog and pony show, he's just straight up, which kind of goes back to that viral video that like BuzzFeed and Now Politics and all those other websites were sharing Upstart with the kneeling question.
Yes, yeah.
And like you could tell from watching it, especially if you followed him on Facebook Live, that that's just who he is. You know, he's just answering the question as honestly as he can.
And as respectfully as he could, too. He really addressed both sides.
Oh, yeah. Which, man, I don't know how he does it. It's tough when people come at me and I'm just like some guy who, you know, draws little cartoons and paints paintings. And it's not my credibility or character on the line. And these people come after him or yell certain things. And like you guys said earlier, this personality kind of reminds you of that John McCain moment. Where that lady was like, oh, Obama's from, he's a Muslim from Mars or whatever the heck she was saying. He was like, look, that's not true. And obviously that lady disagreed with him, but he had the courage of his convictions to be honest. And I think Bethel has the same thing, which what I think most of us sorely miss if you watch any news for any amount of time.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your art before we stop taking all of your time up. So obviously you draw him for the most part, but where does the style come from? Where do the ideas come from? What inspires you to put your artistic energies into Beto?
Yeah, so I focus a lot of my work on the region, El Paso, kind of Mexican-American border culture, the culture I grew up in, moved away for a couple years, came back, and I kind of saw a new breath of life and joy in where I grew up. And so I kind of made it a point or mission of each piece that I do to focus on finding the joy in our area, in our towns, our community, our neighborhood, our state. And so when Bethel decided to run, it wasn't a big leap to take the joy I have for the region and its like wildlife and landscapes and color to someone that represents us and has represented the communities here in El Paso for years. Because it's no surprise to us that, you know, Bethel is so great and has been a really great representation ambassador for the border. I try and do the same with my work. So when I saw he was running, I was like, oh, this is perfect. Mm. I just want to help, you know?
Do you think you'll expand your art, your political art, after this race is over?
I hope so. I mean, I've done some other political stuff for nonprofits and for charities locally.
Cool.
I love to give, you know, like this is a Tornillo tent city that's in maybe 45 minutes from where I'm talking to you now.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my wife, we try with the art to try and support as many local charities as possible. And it seems like all politics are local these days, and even the national politics. So I'm always hoping to help causes I believe in, you know? And so when they come, I always tell charities and tell people, it's like, look, email me, let me read up about what you do, and I want to help. You know, I'd love to help and give whatever I can give in whatever capacity I can give, especially if it's related to artwork.
Yeah, that's awesome to be able to wield a skill for public good that way.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah,
for sure.
I'm pretty lucky, too, like, especially in the state. I went to law school in San Antonio, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And all through law school, I volunteered and I worked and, you know, immigration charities, nonprofits, and other nonprofits that provided like educational services or whatever. So it's been incredible that once I started painting and doing the Bethel stuff, a lot of these friends I had or people I had met just through the civil rights lawyer group or the immigrant rights lawyer groups are now all doing really great things in the country and in the state. So it's been really cool to be able to email a friend from Austin or Dallas and say, hey, you're the head of this organization or you're working for this. How can my art help?
Yeah.
And then since they know me, they're like, yeah, okay, cool. Let's do it. So I'm real lucky in that aspect too.
So if someone's listening to this and they think, oh, I don't have a t-shirt, I want one from this guy, where can they go to find you online?
Yeah, I have Bethel stuff and then my art stuff at my website, just Gabaldon, GABALDON art.com. And then another local print t-shirt maker makes a lot of other of my Bethel designs. Since it's just me and my wife, we can't run a shop out of our house, so we just this other place called Proper Print Shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always tell people, too, like, go buy all the stuff at Bethel's website. Go buy all the shirts there. Donate time, money, and good vibes, because we need everything if we're going to win.
Yeah, good
I'm
luck.
I'm giving my good vibes.
We're pulling for you.
Well, thank you. We need it.
All right.
We need it. We need it.
Thanks so much, Patrick.
Whew.
I wish I believed in someone that much.
I hope that this episode sounds, like, triumphant after the election.
Well, yeah. It's just funny because, you know, obviously, like, I don't think it's going to be a surprise to anyone listening here that we are rooting for him to win.
Yeah.
But not everyone is. And
true.
Yeah. And so, look, we were thinking about having, like, a Trump supporter on the show, you know, like a real Make America Great Again, wear hat wearing, you know, locker up type. But it's tough because the New York Times keeps doing this thing where it keeps going to, like, old rusted out towns and being like, this is what Trump supporters think.
Yeah.
And it's giving a microphone to, like, the same, like, bunch of people that we know what they think to some degree.
Also, to me, the problem is often those interviews aren't arming their reporters with facts, and
right.
Reporters just let, like, those political radicals, as I think of them, they're not sources in a classic sense. They're not being, like, taken to task at every sentence.
Yeah, but like stenographers, the reporters.
Yeah, yeah, which is like exactly what you said. We don't need like a slice of life.
Right, this, yeah, I think know? We kind of know. So we decided we just didn't want to be a platform like cable news often is for people that, not that we disagree with them. I mean, there's different policies that we can disagree on, you know, but just probably don't have the best, I don't know, they just like don't, I think, represent anything new, you know, in terms yeah. of talking about things.
But in the sense that, so I guess I'm sort of acting as a, I can give you some
proxy.
Context
yeah.
yeah, on conservative fandom.
Yeah, because we didn't want to like leave that out. We didn't want to be like, this is a show all about liberals, because we know that we're in a country that's very divided. And it's just as interesting to me to know why people care about people from both sides of the aisle, you know?
Yeah. I mean, okay, so full disclosure, my parents are extremely conservative.
Okay.
To the point now where, like, the word conservative has changed so radically over the last like 5 years, and my parents have been at like the far right of that movement at every step. So when I was, you know, researching for this episode, I remembered the day I brought, you know, like the now iconic Obama poster home, and I hung it up in my teenage bedroom. And I remember the conversation with my dad being awkward at most. He was just like, where'd you get that? And I said, oh, like a kid was handing them out at school if you signed up for something, like a newsletter or whatever. And he was like, so you agree with what Obama says he wants for the country? And at the time I was like 17. So I was like, yeah, without having looked into it at all. I was just like, seems like a good choice.
I like them.
But like what stands out to me now is that if my brother were to bring like a Beto poster and put it in his room, I assume that the conversation would be much more heated than it was
right.
in 2007.
Your dad was kind of like willing to forgive the childhood curiosity with the left.
Yeah, both my parents would say that thing where it was like, if you're a young person
right.
who's a conservative, you have no heart. But if you're an old person who's a liberal, you have no brain. Like,
sure.
They definitely thought of it as like, this is the natural course of events that you're going to go
phase.
Through. Right. Yeah. But also, the national conversation was not quite as heated back then.
Right.
That's hard for me to remember. Sometimes you hear it in the news where it's like, we've never been more divided. And that sounds cartoony and crazy, but I don't know, like, not that many years ago, I would see conversations between people who identified as conservative or progressive. Like, it would happen in front of me in my own family. And now it's like completely détente. Like, no one can even mention anything remotely political, or it's going to be a nuclear bomb goes off.
And what could, you know, it's funny because I am very much a liberal, and
yeah,
I
and
think of myself
as well.
Yeah, yeah. They're probably not as liberal as me, but they were Democrats. I think of myself as the rational one, right? In terms of the political conversation. And obviously conservatives or whatever your parents are, far right people think about themselves that way as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally. Well, I think my dad like prides himself on logic. So I can have a conversation with my father that doesn't end in screaming.
OK.
To him, it's like he did a math problem and he got the solution that he feels comfortable with. And he's like vaguely curious about your process. But if in the end your answer is wrong, then somewhere along the line, you had like a fallacy. You
like,
ran into a fallacy.
Like when Colbert said it, like, feels true.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
What is it about them or about conservatives and then especially Trump? Right.
Because sure,
I feel like
yeah,
Trump,
yeah.
in a lot of ways, he both kind of laid bare what the Republican Party is about, but also is kind of an outlier in the how kind of crass he is, right? At least at the very least that. So, what is it about Trump that keeps them plugged in and on board?
I mean, well, before I say anything, I should say, like, I haven't spoken to my parents about politics since Trump was elected.
Okay.
Pretty much.
But you know they're still probably supporting him?
Oh, yeah, 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 okay. yeah. I have to assume. I think that the thing that pisses liberals off the most about Trump, or, like, baffles us, is that he's, like, too stupid to care about decorum. I personally don't think that Trump is making a conscious decision to be like, I am not going to read any documents.
It's like Godzilla saying, I hate buildings. I'm going to stomp on them.
Right. Yeah. And my dad did always say when I was a kid, he was like, I wish someone would run on like their ideals and say, I am not going to run again. I want one term and I'm going to fuck up everything that I want to fuck up and then I'm done.
Sure.
But I don't think that's Trump's POV anymore. I think he wants to stay in power.
Right? Oh, yeah. He wants to stay in power forever.
Yeah. So I think like, maybe when he was running, the idea of him being like a chaotic, like renegade was interesting mm-hmm. to them. My parents definitely were like on board with the idea of McCain as a, what did he call himself? A maverick.
Right.
It was like, McCain's a maverick. Like that, if you're talking about personal brands, that was very attractive to my father.
So yeah. He was more into McCain than Bush in 2000, you think?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I remember they both loved Bush because at the time my father was in the military and it was very like, we have to be loyal to the current president because our country's in danger.
Okay.
Like there wasn't even a choice. I don't remember them being like angry at Al Gore or really at Obama at all. It was just kind of like another saying of my dad's is like, he's like, you know, I can get angry about something, but at the end of the day, milk's going to cost the same.
Sure.
Like my life is not really affected based on like whatever small progressive thing Obama was doing.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like Trump is very much branded. He's a celebrity.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And it's just interesting to me that the thing about him is that most presidents like kind of move towards the center. I think a lot of liberals were disappointed by Obama as much as they still liked him because he was not, you know, he didn't do everything that they thought he might, right? He seemed like a savior type. Medicare, you know, the option for Medicare didn't happen in the, you know, healthcare expansion. So many homes were foreclosed on, yada, yada, yada. A lot of things didn't happen. And so we could see that Obama, as much as we still like him and now really idealize him for based on what's happening now, we could say, all right, we still support him, but we're not 100% on board the way we were maybe in 2008, right? But Republicans, or at least conservatives, it seems like they are willing to go along with Trump as far out as he goes from, as far right as he goes, as just how nakedly aggressive he gets towards, you know, women or other politicians or
no
whatever.
No one knows where the line is anymore. And that's where another fandom that intersects comes in, which is the Q conspiracy.
Yes.
Yeah, which my mother is very, very much into.
Right. You told me something interesting today about your mom.
What did I say?
You said she's got like a whole Twitter fandom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So my mom is like a conservative Twitter influencer. She's like a top conservative on Twitter.
Is this your TCOT?
I don't know because I learned this from my sister. Wow. And I immediately, like, I have had to create like Berlin Wall boundaries in my
family.
I'm going
to look her up. Do you know her Twitter profile?
I don't.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, no. Pauline sent me a screenshot of her like bio once and I immediately deleted it. I was like, I know that I will be looking at this. I can't deal. I'm just not going to have the conversation. But yeah, her follower count was like the same as mine, which is like 4,000 something.
That's wild.
Yeah. And I've had a Twitter for years and years and my mom, this is like a pretty recent thing.
I mean, it's interesting how people can get these fandoms for themselves, these sub phantoms on Twitter, like the Krasenstein brothers who are,
oh God, they suck
so much.
They're
so stupid.
I hate those. Oh God.
These two, like,
it's so creepy.
These two weird brothers from Florida who started a website and they just regurgitate headlines in really big letters and then write, suck at Trump.
Yeah,
on
they're
Twitter.
Like progressive grifters.
Yeah, it's the worst. Like, if they weren't in the political space, they would be selling, like, salt that's supposed to make you lose weight on TV at like 2 a.m.
Yes.
Like they would be doing some kind of Ponzi scheme or some kind of like some kind of like, you know, triangle, whatever.
Yeah. But like, it's the same tactic. Like
pyramid, not triangle.
It's the same
pyramid
tactic.
Scheme. The triangle.
Ponzi triangle.
They'd be doing a triangle.
Everyone's like, all right, I'm gonna
remember that photo they put up with them like with their kid and they're like, if you don't want to see a shirtless man.
Well, no, it was in response to, so they wrote a children's book and Mueller's on the front and he has apparently like flexed so hard that his suit just like busted off. So it's a shirtless Mueller on the front and someone was like, that's kind of creepy, don't you think? And they responded with photos of themselves shirtless, like, look at us, we're near this child. It isn't weird.
It's like, no, like, and it's really strange because I'm like in a canoe. like a lake, an abandoned lake.
It only got stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my point is like, okay, so.
But those fandoms happen, like Seth Abramson, right? Like this like, yes. Lawyer who has like, he'll retweet news and like blaring headlines being like, this is it for Trump. He's in the shitter.
Yes. Or, you know, people on Twitter who I think of as like level headed in their real lives, they'll be like, go get him, Mueller. Like he's just professional, like doing his job. Like he's not an Avenger, you know?
But there is that grifting sense or that like micro celebrity, micro fandom.
Right. Because posts like that, the subtext is please retweet this.
Right.
You know, which I also do, but I don't do it by like lionizing politicians that I... You're making a face like
no,
I
I'm
do.
Thinking, no, I'm thinking... No, you don't. I'm thinking of, you know, Ken Marino, the actor and director?
Yes.
He's really funny. I follow him on Twitter. He constantly retweets Seth Abramson. And I think about like celebrities who like then find these people.
Yeah.
Because we're all,
yeah.
It's all kind of like an even playing field on Twitter.
That's, yeah, that's a very weird thing.
Right. So like if Judd Apatow retweets you, like every liberal loves Judd Apatow.
Yeah. And up until the craziness with Guardians, James Gunn was a big, right. Like, I'll talk to randos.
Wait, what
about
happened with
political
Guardians?
Stuff. yeah. But anyway, my point is like, it's weird because Twitter is set up in a way that we never see the opposite side unless you're like actively searching those
right.
Hashtags.
Or people are just dunking on them.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the only time you see it. I think the algorithm is set up now where it's like you're only going to see tweets that people you often engage with have engaged with.
And I know that's not healthy, but also it's very healthy because if I just read conservative tweets all day on my timeline, I would jump into a river.
Why do you think I didn't want to see my mom's?
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. I'd be upset too.
I mean, okay, so here's like my personal take on the Q fandom, which is a fandom,
sure.
In a classic sense.
All these
sense,
things
like,
are fandoms.
Yeah, it was born on the internet. It,
right.
It lives on 4chan the way that like Stucky lives on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
Stucky is the pairing of Steve and Bucky, in case you know listeners are wondering. But like Stucky is as real to me as Q is.
Right.
Like, because people talk about it. There's a comic book coming out that like they kickstarted it immediately. They got ton of money as this renegade government official who like goes by Q and like solves crimes.
And like Q like is just a liberal like prank, right? What like gun amok, right?
Well, they haven't been able to prove that like the entire thing is, but they're pretty sure.
Right.
So QAnon is like either a user of 4chan. 4chan is set up so you don't know. Like
right.
There's no usernames that you're logging in. And the fun of it is that everyone goes by Anon. But anyway, it's like this person who says that they're a high up government official has been saying that things appear to be going wrong for the Trump administration because they're letting it happen and they're like waiting to drop a bunch of information. So, but you can see, like, if someone was so far gone into Trump fandom, like true fandom, they're going to do mental gymnastics. They're either going to have a come to Jesus moment where they're like, oh, this man's not who I thought he was. That's a whole can of worms. Or they're going to further get into this narrative where it's like, all of this is going to be worth it. Like, I'm not going to look stupid,
right.
You know, when all this comes out. Anyway, the Q conspiracy is that Trump is planning to indict a whole bunch of people, of course, including Hillary Clinton, who are involved with child sex
They're
trafficking.
They're obsessed with pedophilia.
No, truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah. I've had a couple conversations with my mom about Q because it's so far beyond, like, policy that it's almost like I'm listening to her recount a movie that she's watched.
You know, I always think of Q-bert when I hear Q-non. I always think
of Q-bert. I hope it turns out
the Q-bert. Administration. Yeah, it's but you know when I hear a thing about like a Russia indictment, I'm like, first of all, liberals have the fantasy too. Like this is the big one. This is the big one. They keep saying
yeah,
it. Keep saying
yeah.
It. Like Seth Abramson, as I mentioned him, he will say this is it. This connects this way, that way, that way. And it's like
yes.
He's trying to find the Zodiac killer. You can see him streaking all the different
yes.
Like things on a big like bulletin board or something like that.
And I will admit, like, my parents actually find the Ted Cruz Zodiac Killer thing funny because it's kind of like a conservative style meme where it's like, we're just going to say something's true. And low key, like, half of us don't think it is, but we think it's so funny that you think it. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's very twisted and strange.
Also, if you told me Ted Cruz was like 15, 20 years older than he actually is, and he was a Zodiac killer, 100% would believe you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's funny because he's so unsettling. Yeah. Like, the biggest piece of, quote, evidence for the Zodiac killer thing is that tweet where he's in front of a butter cow, and he's like, wow, a whole cow made of butter. Like, it's just not something a person would tweet.
When I hear about the Russia stuff, I'm like, oh, maybe I start hoping that the whatever charge just happened is like the big one. And so I convince myself to some degree that it's going to be it.
And I have the flash of anger when people, sometimes you are like, it's not going to make a difference. Like, I fucking hate that. Like, for a moment, I just wanted to like strangle somebody, because why would that be your first?
Because nothing makes a difference.
Good news. It's not going to do anything. Like, just give me a millisecond to feel okay. But they're right, because nothing has worked.
Right. It was like a thing I wrote for The Independent this week. I wrote a thing about how, like, I mean, now there's going to be some hearings, so hopefully I'm wrong. And we're going to get so many bad reviews, by the way, for this political thing.
Yeah.
But
I'm trying to be as kind as possible.
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, like,
here's the thing. I don't hate conservatives. I think that, you know, I think that the people I hate are really, really far gone and extremist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to say, like, I think the private sector has a big role to play in healthcare and we can find a way to make it work. Okay.
Right.
You know, like, if, like,
well, that's what it used to mean.
Right. And I don't believe that necessarily, you know, but, like, sure, let's figure out a way to make that work. If there's, like, a way that, like, oh, charter schools, we can find a way to make that work while also not taking away from the integrity of public schools.
Sure.
Okay. So it's not the idea of, like, small government or quote-unquote free market.
Oh, yeah.
It's just insanity that it goes so far off the rails.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about, there used to be, like, a popular quiz that you would take online and it would put on, like, the continuum of, like, political leanings. And now I feel like, who doesn't know off the top of their head whether they're right or left? Like,
yeah.
That's not a luxury that Americans have anymore. Like, you're on one side.
We are not debating policy. We're debating, like, we're in war.
Yeah.
You know, it's debating philosophy, not policy.
I mean, ironically, like, Bill O'Reilly years ago was like, it's a culture war. And
yeah.
People were like, oh, that's crazy. But
although it is partly because of Bill O'Reilly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm not saying he didn't bring it into fruition, but.
So this has been the Fandom Files. Yeah. Emily Gaudette, a huge Bill O'Reilly fan.
Well, yeah, speaking of fandom, I definitely read his children's books when I was a child.
Did you really?
Yeah, because that's, if you're an adult who's a fan of the brand, you're going to buy the child version.
Yeah, I remember, on that note, I remember my dad had Al Franken's book, Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot. And I read part of it, and I just, like, will always think of that when it comes to Rush Limbaugh.
We were probably doing that at the same time. That's funny.
Yeah, and then luckily we ended up on the same side.
Yeah, pretty much.
Look, again, we're going to get so many bad ratings on this show, but you know what? It's okay. We spoke our minds, and I think people have to respect that.
I guess. Or they don't have to listen.
That's true. And looks, no one does, right? Right. Just kidding.
If you listened to this enough that you got angry at me, first of all, I'm impressed.
Yeah.
You listened to the whole episode. That's awesome. But if you're kind of like, I don't know, I have some thoughts that are not direct insults, you can tweet me at Emily G. Monster.
Or me at Jordan Zachary. Because look, I am on Twitter all day.
Yeah.
Like, that's my job. They just monitor me and make sure
it's
I'm on
Twitter.
It's
not my job, but I'm on there all day.
Yes. And so we are happy to have, actually, I'm really curious because, like, I was asking all these questions about your parents being Trump supporters. I'm curious, just as a political mind, like, what it is about him or people in his, you know, White House that people still are really, you know, care for.
Yeah, because I don't know, like, at some point politics is sort of gut reactions, right?
Right.
And, like, when I look at someone like Beto, it's like, okay, I clearly have a positive reaction.
When Patrick said that he dressed up like Don Travolta
in
Pulp Fiction, you, like, almost fell out of your chair.
Like, come on. And it was the same thing with Obama, too, you know?
That's still that photo of him, like, getting out of the beach at Hawaii. Like, a shirtless photo?
Well, no, I think of the one with, like, the straw hat where he's smoking I think it's a joint. I don't know. That's an iconic image. But my gut reaction to Donald Trump, regardless of policy, has always been, ew, get away.
Yeah.
Like, is your gut reaction not that?
Yeah. If you have...
Tell me.
If you have a different gut reaction, please let us know. at Fanophile Sci-Fi, at Emily G. Monster, at Jordan Zachary. And if you've listened this far, if you have listened this entire show, you probably want to give us 5 stars because you want other people to hear either how smart we are or what jackholes we are. And the more ratings we get, like the more people listen.
That's true.
Yeah. And so if you want to give us 1 star, fine. Just talk to us first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And just say, hey, assholes, we're giving you 1 star. I'll say, as you are.
As you were, TZOT.
Yes, please. Yes. So we can't get in touch with your mom. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But the rest of us, please give us 5 stars. The summer's over. What else do we have?
It's true.
This podcast. So see you next week when we talk about Chuck E. Cheese. It's true. We're talking about Chuck E. Cheese next week. So if this is too political for you, come right back to the next episode because it will not be political at all.
We'll be back with no politics.
All righty. Thank you, everybody. Bye.